Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
What a chat we were just having about the virtues of Cat 5 Ethernet cables. Or rather, the lack of virtue to those.
People are very dissatisfied with our service if we don't mention a router, a broadband hub or something.
Well, except my wife, who threatens every time we talk about either broadband or David Shaw to, at the very best, stop listening to the podcast. At the very worst, divorce me and take half of my things.
Well, as long as she doesn't take half of the podcast, because that would be sort of self-defeating, wouldn't it? Because then she'd have to listen to it.
Or have to make it. She could take me away. And then it'd be you and Kate. And I have to say, I'd love to hear a podcast of just you and Kate.
Well, I mean, yeah. I don't. What would we talk about? It'd be quite interesting.
I mean, we could do an experiment.
Yeah, we could do a... If you were to step away for a week and just let us run it, I think Kate's right. She's in the chat. Kate is saying yes. Can you imagine the ranting? Because we're both ranters. So,
well, yeah. I mean, you're both glass half empty people.
That's why it was. That was why it was 50-50 whether you were going to marry me or her, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it was a good conversation, and I'm glad we had it in. It was very cheery. I think we should get on with some news, most of which is relatively cheery this week. We're going to start with the BBC, which wrote this week that the government has introduced new legislation to protect smart devices in people's homes from being hacked. This obviously comes as very welcome news to me. As you'll recall from last week's episode, I've installed about a dozen smart home gizmos in our castle over the past month. Anyway, the Beeb continues to say that recent research from consumer watchdog Which, decided that's how I'm going to pronounce that.
Yeah, because it's got a question mark. Yeah.
Are you being served? its research suggested homes filled with smart devices could be exposed to more than 12,000 attacks in a single week. The government separately said it estimates, on average, there are 9 such devices in each UK household. Obviously, that's an average. That seemed like a very high average to me.
Well,
9
if you think about
smart
it,
devices.
There must be hundreds in some houses.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay. Well, anyway, separately, it also cited Kaspersky research, which showed that there were 1.5 billion attacks against Internet of Things products in the first 6 months of 2021. That's globally. But that in itself is a 100% increase since the same period a year earlier. Also, we do know that COVID, working from home, shelter in place, lockdowns, whatever the terminology is, it generally has increased people's spending on home devices. So that has probably certainly fueled that. So it's also fueled the government's interest in legislating to make sure that these devices are not posing security risks for our citizens, the population. So it wants default passwords for internet-connected devices to be banned, and firms that do not comply would face fines, huge fines. I did actually get to this lower down. The BBC said the regime would be overseen by a regulator. I think we can assume Ofcom, right, Ian?
Mm, almost certainly. I would leave so, yeah.
Which would be appointed once the bill came into force. And the fines in questions would be to fine companies up to £10 million, which is not a lot of money, or 4% of their global turnover, which is a hell of a lot of money, potentially, as well as up to £20,000 a day for ongoing contraventions. But the default password thing is only one of the issues. I went to the government's website to find some details on this proposal, which is in its very, very early stages yet. We're a long way from this becoming any kind of a law. It says it wants to ensure that consumer connectable products, such as smart TVs, internet-connected cameras and speakers, are more secure against cyber attacks. Now, that, I suppose, actually does go some way to explain why it thinks that the average household has 9 smart devices, because actually if you're including connected TVs, the majority of which sold now, I believe, are internet connected, and speakers and things, then yes, I find that more believable, actually. Second of 3 things, it wants to require manufacturers and importers and distributors to comply with these new security requirements as they relate at least to the consumer products, which is very significant, because that means it's not just the dodgy company out in the middle of nowhere somewhere selling crap for cheap. It's also going to apply to the people who bring them into the country and sell them to you, which in my head equate to Amazon being responsible, for instance.
I was going to say, because you're going to have absolutely no luck enforcing this against the million small Chinese companies that make or resell, more likely, these products from like one Chinese company, maybe.
Yeah. And then finally, the third of 3 things, as far as the consumer stuff goes, it wants to create an enforcement regime. It wants civil and criminal sanctions aimed at preventing insecure products being made available in the UK market. So that is pretty significant stuff. It's early days. We're pre-consultation on a lot of this stuff. And any such enforcement, I believe I read earlier, and I'm going off script a bit here, they would expect 12 months after it gained royal assent, which obviously is the very last stage of a bill becoming an act. So we're probably a good couple of years away, I would say, on anything like this coming into force. But it gives you a little insight into where the government's thinking. And actually, it makes a lot of sense when you look at some of the devices that it thinks it could target. I'm going to go through the list here. Smartphones, obvious. Connected cameras, TVs and speakers. Connected children's toys and baby monitors. Connected safety-relevant products such as smoke detectors and door locks. Very smart, I think. Internet of Things base stations and hubs. So that's your things like your Philips Hue hub and other ones too. Outdoor leisure products. This includes GPS devices that are not strictly wearable, i.e. it's not a smartwatch, but it might be a tracking device. Connected home automation, alarms, appliances, including washing machines and refrigerators, and smart home assistants. That is a very, very large list of things, but also some massive companies responsible for bringing a lot of the most popular ones into the UK. So this will be something that will undoubtedly get pushback from big companies, and you can smell the arguments already, I would imagine. So there is that. There is one other thing I wanted to get to, because there's quite a lot of supporting data on this. That I think some of this came from the government, some of this came from the BBC report. But the BBC wrote, and I remember this, in 2017, hackers had stole data from a casino in the US via an internet-connected fish tank. I don't know if you remember that. I remember that.
No, I don't remember that, actually. That's brilliant.
Yeah, we've seen that there are reports of webcams being hijacked and people like be able to chat to family members.
Webcams are the worst.
And without question.
And that's actually why I said Chinese companies, because it is those cheap little sort of baby monitor cameras and you know, home security systems that are very, very well known for having a default password and username.
And the other thing that was in the BBC story, poor security on a home Wi-Fi router could be behind the uploading of illegal child abuse images from a home network that led police to accusing an innocent couple of the crime, which would be a pretty terrifying thing.
To say
no
the
doubt,
least.
To say the yeah, I mean, I can't think of much worse to be falsely accused of. But so all of this is in the early stages, as we say, but it broadly seems smart, particularly when you look at some of the most popular passwords that people choose to use. Do you want to have a guess?
These are always a horror show, aren't they? You know, password and password 1234 are always at the top.
Yeah.
Names. I mean, I can't think of specific examples, but it's always variations along a theme of, you know, my password.
Oh yeah,
I don't know, you know, that kind of stuff.
It's so in the top 5 of the most problematic passwords, and this is according to a whole bunch of outlets. It's 123456, 123456678, password 1, and let me in. And some people always say Oh, in fact, Kate in the chat's just noted there's QWERTY, which is one, but often that's not long enough. So QWERTY 123 is often one. ABC 123 is another one if you can get away with six characters. Because people like simplistic things. They like basic, easy to remember stuff. And just before you get your thought in edgeways, Ian, the reason why I think we have to think very hard about how this will be implemented, this law, this ban, is that if you force companies to make people set their own passwords, it's very likely they'll either disable them altogether or they'll put something that is technically worse than the default. Because these devices, they never have a password that's 123456. They do have one that is at least technically, you know, a garbled number of letters and numbers. Yeah. They're still easy to crack, but...
Well, they're not that easy to crack. Like, the ones... I was just going to say, actually, let me just see how many characters there are on my my BT one.
Okay.
Because it's quite interesting. I mean, so what can I tell you about it? Right. So this is just for the Wi-Fi. I've changed this, but I'm not going to read it out anyway. But it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 characters. And it's uppercase and lowercase letters with digits, but no special characters. But I don't consider special characters to be much of a deal anyway, because they're no more difficult for a computer to guess than a normal character, really. So that would be okay. I think... What I find interesting about this is that also, presumably, this is a lot about companies that have faulty code where they've got a baked-in administrative password, because you hear a lot of stories about so that, you know, that particular example of the sort of internet cameras. It's often the case that you might set your own password when you set it up, but there is still I don't want to call it a backdoor because it's probably not intended as that, but there is an administrative account in there that was presumably set at some point in the factory and is the same on every single device. And if those get found out, then people have no problem accessing literally every device with that username and password. So that's a huge problem. So I think aside from... Default passwords can be decent. Like, for example, I think that BT Whole Home is probably a reasonably good password. But again, obviously, you are free to change it. I think the important thing is, if you're going to set a default password, then it's probably a good idea to make it really hard for anyone to get around. I don't object to the idea of that, because as you said, the password that they set is probably better than the password you're going to set.
Technically, yes.
I mean, it would be the better
of two evils.
Yeah. It's difficult, this, because I do have a lot of sympathy for people, because every single thing in the entire world needs a username and a password now. Like, you can't go on a website without it wanting some information from you. And it is actually quite boring and tedious having to constantly plug in passwords and remember which one you use. And if you're not using the same one, which you shouldn't be, obviously, then you can have a real problem. And then, obviously, you have to have a password manager. And then you have to have a password for the password manager. And that in itself might be problematic. So, I mean, my password manager password is incredibly long and complicated. And I refuse to use any sort of biometrics for it, because what would be the point of that?
But you still
have to type that in from time to time when you need to, you know, use something. And it's boring.
So you put your password manager in the password into the password manager of someone who you trust, and vice versa. Anyway, Mike made a good point here. I use a password manager and try to get people to use them rather than using the same password everywhere, which is incredibly smart. And it's true. And a password manager is generally agreed upon to be the best way of dealing with what is fundamentally not a brilliant system. Where I find password managers problematic, however, is almost always in the specific case of smart devices and router admin pages, because they are notoriously bad at triggering a password manager to autocomplete the correct password. Yeah. They never have usernames. They only ever have a password box, and they're just not good at remembering them. And it's a real hassle. They don't work very well. None of the ones I've used work very well.
Probably something to do with the fact that they're not using the password field or something like that. So the browser doesn't see them as a proper password. They might be using something else. But
it adds another level of crappiness to the experience, which is never good.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a big part of the problem, isn't it? It's like the point is, I think, that we do need a different solution to passwords. So Microsoft recently made it you could get rid of your password if you wanted to. So when you were logging into, you know, Office 365 or something like that, passwords were optional, and instead you just use two-factor authentication. Well, I
and you know what? And
technically,
you know what?
Two-factor anymore, is it? Yeah, go on.
The crazy thing is I remember writing about that for Business Week about 4 or 5 years ago, when it was just emerging as a thing, and that's how long it has taken to get it to become something that can be embedded in something as popular as Office, and it is still only very, very tentatively a toe in the water, if you like, as far as replacing passwords go. Banks do a lot of interesting things with vocal pattern identification, but obviously we then have the twin rise of deepfakes and spoofs, which makes that at least trickier to deploy quickly. So there's
things like 3D face scanning are quite good though. So Microsoft Hello, Apple's Face ID, those are very, very hard to overcome.
They are. And you know what? I remember I was at, I don't know where it was, CES or IFA or something, and Microsoft was doing a live demo on stage of Windows Hello, and they got two identical twin girls on stage, and in live, at least they said it was live, and I had no reason to doubt the way it was done. They got them to set a password, one of them to set a password with their face, just using their face, and then put the other identical twin in front, and it wouldn't unlock. It would only unlock with the correct twin, and it was impressive, even in that controlled environment.
Yeah, because it's 3D, it's going to pick up, you know, all sorts of very minor differences that you wouldn't be visible as a, you know, when you're looking at someone who's a twin. So yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and these are all good solutions, but of course they're, you know, they're problematic in their own way, because you've got to have a specially compatible camera. They're not the simplest devices. It's great if you've got a laptop, but it's, you know, it's not going to help you with your router, which doesn't have a camera or any way to connect a camera. So it is a big problem. And I want to one-up you a little bit in your memory of 4 or 5 years ago. You know, those little fobs that you get with a changing number that, you know, RSA used to use have been around for decades. I remember those when I was in IT. And of course, they have their own problems too, because they can drift out of sync, which causes enormous problems because you won't be able to log in if that happens. So it's a hard problem to solve. And I like the idea of it, actually. I've got really nothing to say bad about this as a law, because as you pointed out, there are a lot of smart things that probably don't really need to be smart. And by virtue of the fact they are, offer a hacker an opportunity to get into your home. And I think the other possibility is that we might start to see devices supported for less time, because, you know, these companies are not going to be able to manage to keep things secure for as long if there's all sorts of restrictions on it. Like, you know, you might find that your smart home device from 5 years ago isn't compliant with this now, and they might just say, right, well, we're not supporting that anymore because it's more trouble than it's worth. I've just had that with a Western Digital NAS.
Wasn't it MyCloud, was it?
Yeah, exactly. They've emailed to say, this is no longer supported in the cloud. Yeah. You must take it off your network, take it off the internet, and use it only locally. I'm like, well, how the hell do you expect me to do that?
Yeah,
it's
I
like,
have the
do
same
you
email.
Want me to set up another internal network that I can connect to that is only, you know, I mean, that's not actually a bad idea, but it's a lot to ask of something that is supposedly secure. It would be good if they could somehow just sever the link to the internet, like, you know, push a code that just removes the internet aspect of it so that it's only accessible internally or something. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I'm probably just going to leave it there, but I mean, obviously it's been disconnected from their cloud, so who knows? But that was because of a security problem, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And the solution is punish your customers.
Yeah, exactly. They are going to give us 20% off in January, though. So to buy another of their own
products.
Yeah, exactly. I won't
That's
be doing
That's brilliant.
Won't
That's like getting
that.
Stabbed in the arm and then someone saying, well, I'll give you a discount on plasters. No, you can bugger off. That's a stupid deal. And I don't use their products anymore for that and many other reasons. The other one being that it didn't work very well.
They're not great.
So, in summary, seems like a good idea, fraught with challenges, will be interesting to see the result of, but won't be for some time. If you have any thoughts on this, have you ever stabbed somebody in the arm and then charged them for the plaster? Let us know. Any thoughts welcome on all of these topics. Hello at uktechshow.com.
Here's something else that might be good or might be bad. Twitter is implementing a new plan as the social media looks to the future following Jack Dorsey stepping down as CEO. It's changing the rules on posting images to its platform. The new terms of service will prohibit any images that feature someone where they've not given their consent to appear. The wide-ranging impact of this, Nate, is that if you've posted a photo of us enjoying a burger together, I could report your post, exactly, and evidence of my guilt, my beef-based gluttony would be suppressed. Although, obviously, that isn't the primary case that they had in mind. What it will do is offer additional protection for some, allowing them to have photos that genuinely do invade their privacy removed. It means that the downside, of course, to that is that if you happen to sort of snap photos of a racist, say, doing racist things, then they might be able to complain and have those photos removed, you know, erasing evidence of any misdoing. However, The Verge reports that Twitter is relying on its human moderation team to make the call. Twitter spokesman Trenton Kennedy, which is a fantastically American name, told the site that the moderators will heavily weigh the circumstances of a given post. He said, "We're going to evaluate things in the context in which they're shared, so I would encourage folks not to draw too many conclusions from past instances or hypotheticals." He also explained that images that were available on other sites would probably not be removed. Posting other kinds of information is already outlawed. You know, there's been plenty of cases where people have tried to dox, you know, someone in a rival. The thing that springs to mind is Gamergate. That was very famous for people sharing the details of their enemies online. It was ridiculous. But that is outlawed. So this mostly sounds like a good thing, doesn't it, Nate?
It does. And I can actually think of an example now that didn't occur to me when we decided to talk about this story today. I don't want to mention a person specifically, so we'll just call him Andrew L. If I know, that's a bit too obvious. We'll call him A. Langson. Where essentially he found that if you did a Google search for just the word selfie, do you remember this? One of the top results was a selfie that he took. And part of the reason why that picture had rocketed up the Google image ranking, and I appreciate this is about Twitter, but bear with me, was because he'd written a piece for CNET about how to take a great selfie. Like, this was quite a few years ago, many years ago, actually.
Oh, many.
And so, you know, CNET's an extremely big website, has very good SEO. A lot of people were looking at it. And so the picture that had been embedded in that CNET article had made its way into Google Images, had been very highly ranked, and lots of people were using it, which on the face of it, no pun intended, might not sound that terrible until it turns out that a lot of very lazy people and companies had started to obviously just download a top image from Google Images and use it in a variety of ways, one of which was a screenshot of a hypothetical user in an app for, I mean, let's just say a very serious disease that you would not want to unintentionally associated with.
Was it like Joey Tribbiani's poster campaign in front? Yeah.
Like that, as a hypothetical user with a quote attached to it. Deeply problematic. Less problematic, but arguably even creepier, was apparently people were printing out this photo and using it as a Halloween mask.
Really?
And there were pictures of people all in masks of his own face. And lots and lots of other examples like that, and people using it on other websites. And it just showed you the power of what happens when a picture you even deliberately post online gets reshared in a different context and goes viral in a way that you are then unable to control. And so Twitter, obviously, is designed around virality of content and things being shared very, very quickly. And if you are someone who ends up being a meme, which is basically what happened with Andy, but, you know, in a different way.
Yeah, I was going to say he is a meme.
In a different way. It becomes just an incredibly difficult, almost insurmountable and very stressful challenge to just get any company to do something about it, even though the picture was uploaded by you, it's been reappropriated. And so I feel that having seen that happen in a different circumstance, this kind of system is something that will really, really benefit people who are badly affected. And the fact that it has human moderation will slow it down, but hopefully will make it, easier to catch duplicates. When someone identifies it's a problem, you can probably hash an image and just stop that image appearing, which I think would be a good thing.
It would be. I think overall, I mean, actually, when you reminded me of A. Langson's problem, then I remembered it because I sent him a picture, a screenshot of him on an advert and said, this is you. And I don't know if we'd had the conversation before, but it had randomly popped up somehow. And I'd been like, oh, God, it's Andy. And then there was a huge discussion. He was going to seek legal recompense, wasn't he, at one stage for one company that had used it. That's just one example. I can think of a lot of really important things that this will help. I mean, it will help safeguard women online, I'm sure, and things like that. I think the downsides to it might be if it's misused, but then, you know, I think perhaps there might be some consideration for journalism given here. If like you say, if Twitter's doing this manually, then they may be able to get around the problems of that by saying, well, actually, this is in the public interest. It's come from a journalist. There's this, and this to back it up. But of course, what it does do is it slows it down massively, and an enormous amount of damage could be done in the meantime. So overall, my feeling towards this is largely positive. Although I have seen other people sharing things online that could cause problems. But again, you know, they are clear in the things. It won't protect celebrities and things like that who are considered to be public figures, politicians, crucially, because, you know, a good example of that was, disgraced Minister Matt Hancock caught snogging a woman that wasn't his wife in an office during lockdown. That would be considered perfectly acceptable. He would have no right to ask for that to be removed, for example. So, you know, we'll have to see how it shakes out, I guess, but it certainly feels like it's probably going to give some assurance to people who need it that their complaints will be taken seriously.
And I just did a little experiment, and I went to Google and I did a search for selfie, and I can confirm that picture in question is nowhere to be seen.
I did the same. And I wondered, had Andy ever... A. Langson, had he ever done a Right to be Forgotten on it or anything?
I honestly don't know. I will actually ask him and find out how that went down.
Maybe
he could talk about it. As a slight side note, I initially did a search on my search engine of choice, Ecosia, for selfie. And I've got to say, the difference in results... In fact, Ian, and indeed everyone listening... I'd encourage you to just go and have a look and just see how different these results are.
Where do I have to go?
Go to Ecosia, so ecosia.com, and do a search for selfie and then switch to images. There is
plant a tree while I'm doing this, obviously.
Yes, there is quite a difference. Let's say on Google's, they are far more diverse. There are many men, there are many women. They are of different ethnic backgrounds.
This is just a collection of really attractive women.
All I see on the Ecosia one are just basically models of women. They are all basically selfies. A huge towards women of Asian heritage, I believe, on mine.
The second result for me is a picture of a woman in a red dress taking a selfie, but it's not actually a selfie.
Yeah.
I guess we can let that go. And some of them really don't look like selfies to me at all. Like, they look like just like photographs. But anyway, that's by the by.
Oh, well, you can always tell a selfie because people have this thing of looking at themselves when they take it, not into the camera lens.
Yes.
And it's a rookie mistake that most people do, and I pride myself on never doing, because I know better than all of these people. And that's when you can tell it's a genuine selfie and when it's something else.
Why do you think these results are so different?
I don't know, but I'll be honest, I've saved quite a few of them. Right. I'm kidding. I only saved one of them. Right. Have you had your face appear on a novelty Halloween print it yourself, mount it to your own face mask? Have you managed to get it scrubbed from the face of the earth via various means? Do let us know if you have a view more generally on this move by Twitter. Obviously, we would very much appreciate that too. You can get in touch with us using hello@uktechshow.com. Here comes some music. Well, I'd like to take a quick moment, as we always do at this part of the show, to just thank our patrons for supporting us directly. I'd like to specifically this week call out Richard Taylor, who frankly has been one of our longest running supporters and at one of our highest levels. So thank you, Richard, and all with whom you sail through the world. And if you're also one of our patrons, this is, of course, your extended ad-free version of the show, and you're about to hear this week's third discussion story. If you're not a patron yet, though, and have been enjoying Text Message, then for just the price of buying us a coffee or two a month, which isn't that much, you can get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen and chat with us live, as many people are doing right now as we speak, and get our Patreon-exclusive show Extra Message every week, which this week, special appearance, as he does once a month now, from Mr. Ian Morris.
Oh.
And a bang-up job he did too.
Oh, that's talking. Very kind.
Yes, so that's out. Anyway, find out more at patreon.com/UK Tech. We actually had an email from another patron, Al Struthers, who said that he, for some reason, ended up on our Patreon page and didn't realize that you can get our unedited live recording for not the top tier, for like an extra dollar or something, that what he was paying. And he said, I thought I'd check, and you should probably point it out to other people. So,
yeah, I mean, this is true, because for at least for me, I am obviously not a Patreon subscriber, because that would be kind of odd. I actually have no idea what you get for the tiers, but I guess anyone who was Patreoning would probably know that.
Yeah. Well, we've banged on about this for long enough. I don't like to go on about it, but patreon.com/UK Tech. And thank you to everyone who is supporting us. Well, Text Message keeps you informed about our goings-on here in the Isles that are British. But Tom Merritt from DailyTechNewsShow.com sent me an email this week with the subject line, "My best promo in weeks." Let's check in with why he thinks that.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, is Tesla's full self-driving mode better than a teenager who's on one? Allison Sheridan shares her behind the autonomously turning wheel experience. And remember, you can't really say autonomous without saying ominous. Also, we check in to see if Jack Dorsey is okay after quitting as Twitter CEO and changing the name of Square to Block. At least the new name has depth. And Microsoft spent much of the week angering people by adding things to the Edge browser that nobody asked for, but they did a couple things right, including making it easier to switch default browsers in Windows 11. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
He's not wrong. That was a really good promo.
It was. To be fair, it was also his only promo in a few weeks, and maybe that's the joke.
He's had a rest, yeah.
Because he was off. And Sarah did one, and then they had Thanksgiving. So either way, thank you, Tom. Good to have you. Good to have you back.
Changing the name from Square to Block, and then changing all the photographs on the site from squares to blocks, is without doubt my favourite thing that's ever happened. It is so out of control in its tech bro-ish existence that I just can't even.
Yeah, except you just did.
Well, yes.
Marvellous. For anyone who is interested, Ian did an episode of Extra Message that's out now on the Patreon feed. And we thought we'd take this moment as well just to ask, if you've been enjoying the show, give us a review. It'd be lovely. We don't really encourage it very often, but we really do love a review, particularly in iTunes, because that's where the majority of people find podcasts, Apple podcasts, that is, now. But any kind of review, wherever you're getting your podcast from, would be enormously appreciated as we move into our 8th year of being
really?
A podcast. Believe it or not, yeah. Doesn't mean we've done 8 years. It is our 8th year beginning
in January. No, I mean, we definitely haven't, because this is number 259. What would we be on if we'd done one every week for eight years?
Well, much higher than that, but even still, yes. we haven't done one every week, so...
No. It would be unsustainable.
It would be. Much like, I would say, the rest of this podcast. Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.